Greetings, Earthers, Martians, Belters, members of the OPA. Welcome to episode 21 of Expanse, the unofficial podcast. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker.
And I'm your host, Nikki Starwalker.
And hey, Nikki, we're back.
Yeah.
A lot of people have been wondering what the hell happened to us. Haven't heard a peep from us for like 3 weeks now. And yeah, Nikki and I both got nailed with the flu that's been going around. And I guess we're lucky that it only took us 2 weeks to get over it, because I've been hearing a lot of people it's been taking 3 weeks or more to get over it. So I still don't have my voice back completely, and Nikki's still fighting a cough. So we'll get through this the best we can, but we've got a little bit behind. We've seen three episodes now since we did episode 20 of the podcast. So we're gonna try to get caught up. So today we are talking about the third episode of season two, Static. So we're just gonna jump right into this episode, Static, and we start off seeing Earth's missiles flying toward the Martian moon of Deimos, which Earth destroys. And then we go to Bobby Draper and her fellow Martian Marines, and they're having a little bit of conflict in the ranks because one of the Marines was originally from Earth, and so some of them are giving him some crap. And yeah, that's how we start out.
Yeah, and this is an important scene because that kind of ignites the anger within Bobby, I think, and makes her even more ready for a fight with Earth. And it killed 17 people, so it's not a small matter. And now it just seems like the Martians and the Earthers are going to go at it anytime soon.
Yeah. So next we go to Tycho Station, and we see kind of the aftermath of the last episode, you know, the very kind of climactic ending, and we see the prisoners that the few prisoners that they took being brought into Tycho. Miller's been restrained after killing Dresden, and Holden is having a bit of a hissy fit and getting in Miller's face about shooting Dresden, and just kind of all kinds of conflict starting out in this episode.
Yeah, and we're finally at Tycho. Well, I mean, we've been at Tycho before, but now we're going to see more of it. And so I got excited at this point to see more of Tycho. And it was kind of interesting because Miller asked Fred Johnson for his gun back, and Fred wouldn't give it back to him and just kind of said, you need to get off of Tycho and get out of here.
Yeah, he's like, there's ships leaving every day, you know, find one and get the hell out of here, basically.
Yeah.
So Fred's kind of pissed at him. Holden's really pissed at him. And yeah, you know, I mean, I get it why they're pissed, but I also personally think that Miller did the right thing, and that, you know, Miller's a man of action. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And he's not someone to sit there and agonize over a decision. Like he knows what he thinks is right to do, and he just does it, you know, and that's it. You know, and I really admire him about that. And, you know, this comes up later in the show, but, you know, we were talking in the last episode about, you know, Dresden was talking, and you saw, you know, Fred at least kind of listening to him, and it kind of sinking in, and, you know, is kind of like the more he talked, the more sense he made, I think, is what we said in the last episode. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that Miller shooting him was probably the best thing that could have happened for everybody. But at least some of the characters in the show right now aren't realizing that or aren't ready to accept that yet.
Right, right. And the thing that I really appreciate about Miller's personality is that he's not afraid to be the bad guy in any given scenario. So like you said, he will do what's right, even if he knows it's going to paint him into a corner or make him look bad.
Yeah, totally. So then we're back to Bobby and the Marines again. And yeah, you know, they're just not getting along. And, you know, there's a lot of tension because of what's going on. And, you know, Bobby, at least it seems like, is all hoping for a war. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I think Bobby's the leader of her little crew.
Yeah, it seems to be.
Yeah. And so I was a little surprised that even she, I mean, at first she tried to break them up, right? And keep tempers calm among them. And then I guess, you know, the Earther, the former Earther, threw a punch at one of the Marines and she hit back. You know, she's like, that's not going to be tolerated. And so, yeah, it was really tense.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to me what they're doing with these scenes with the Marines and with Bobby, because, you know, we don't want to talk too much about the books, but in the books, like, none of this stuff happened, or at least if it happened off camera. You know, this wasn't in the books. Bobby wasn't introduced until much later in the story. And I mean, I think it's cool that they brought her in, and I like the actress and I like the character, but it's kind of interesting because, you know, we're seeing a side of Bobby that I'm not sure that we saw so much in the books. And you know, it seems like her unit, like, they're very lacking in discipline for Marines. Mm-hmm. And even her, you know, the way she's talked to her superiors sometimes and the way they're kind of at each other's throats, just to me, it seems a little odd. Mm-hmm. And seems very un-Marine-like to me of what I know of the Marines in the real world. But you know, I guess they're kind of setting up an arc for her. You know, they're giving her somewhere to go. So right now she's very, like, you know, she's wanting this war, and you know, I kind of get it. Like, they train all the time and this is what they're training for, is mm-hmm. a war with Earth. So I get it that, like, she wants that to happen so she can use her training, but it also makes the character seem very, short-sighted, I guess, to put it nicely. That she doesn't seem to really be thinking about what would that mean.
Right.
You know, and really, do I want to live in a world where this war has become a reality now? And I would think if she'd think about it for 5 minutes that she probably wouldn't want to, but it's interesting.
Yeah, it is.
So next we go to probably one of my favorite parts of this episode, and where things, at least for me, start really getting interesting, which is where they're dealing with one of the scientists, and I think really the only scientist that they took alive from the communications station. And, you know, turns out this guy's like a total psychopath. Turns out that they all are, that they actually did some kind of manipulation of their minds using, like, electromagnets and whatnot to reduce their capacity for empathy. And I just think there's really interesting things going on in this episode with this guy and Amos, and how you kind of see Amos like sensing that this, he has a lot in common with this guy, you know. And I think it's interesting, you know, later in the episode, they're talking with a scientist or a doctor. I'm not sure. They don't really tell us who she is, but she's talking about what was done to their minds, to their brains. And Amos asks if it's reversible. Mm-hmm. You know, and just the way that Wes Chatham is acting in this, and the way he's portraying Amos, it, at least to me, it seems like Amos is seeing a lot of similarities between himself and this guy. And he's kind of wondering, you know, oh, is this something that, like, you know, they could wave some magnets over my head and I could be normal or more normal, you know?
Oh, wow.
So, and I don't really know if that's something he would want or if he was just curious, but I did think it was interesting that he asked that question. And then the lady's like, no, you know, it's not reversible.
That's fascinating because I didn't even pick up on that. I didn't make that connection that maybe Amos was thinking about himself when he asked that.
Yeah. There's some real subtleties going on, I think, with Wes Chatham. If you really watch his face in mm-hmm. some of those scenes and the way he looks at this guy, you know, and the way, you know, he eventually tells, well, he's eventually the one that's able to get through with them. So in this scene that we're at right now, Holden and Fred are kind of trying to question him and they don't really get anywhere with him.
Right.
And then later on, you know, Amos is like, you know, have you ever talked to a pedophile before? You know, and everybody's like, what are you talking about? And you know, he basically says, you know, you guys took the wrong approach. trying to get this guy to talk, because you're talking about stopping the protomolecule, and this guy doesn't want to stop it. It's very obvious he's kind of almost enraptured mm-hmm. by it, and he wants to see this thing become whatever it's going to become, and he's curious about it, and he seems to admire it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so when they're talking, like, how do we stop it? Like, it just kind of shuts the guy down. So then later, you know, Amos talks to him and gets him talking about the beauty of this protomolecule and what it does to people, and actually, you know, manages to get some information from him. But I just think, you know, those scenes with him and this guy, like, they're, you know, when you watch his face, there's just some real subtle acting going on there. And I'm just really blown away with what Wes is doing with this role. And yeah, I mean, I could be reading too much into it, but I definitely felt like when he asked the doctor, oh, is this reversible? You know, I'm not sure why he was asking, but he was definitely a little bit more interested in the answer to that question than just what's going on with the protomolecule and yeah. all that. It was kind of personal for
yeah.
him.
I like that. And I really liked that they had the doctor explaining these things, because it kind of sounded like something I've heard of in the scientific community. It sounded like a theory that I've heard of before, with the magnets, you know, passing over certain parts of your brain, that kind of thing.
Right.
And so whether or not it's true, it adds this little element that makes the whole scene a little easier to I guess believe
right.
and yeah. really get into. And that's a great thing about good science fiction, is that it gives you a little grain of something that you may have heard of in the past and kind of pulls you in that way. And
yeah, a great example of that is they mentioned beta sheets.
Oh yeah.
You know, and how, which, you know, probably most people don't know what a beta sheet is, but it's a protein structure. So, you know, individual proteins have a structure that's made up of the different amino acids that make up the protein and how they're charged in it, and it gives the molecule a shape. And then various proteins together come together and build bigger structures. So one type of structure is an alpha helix, like the DNA molecule. Well, a beta sheet is another type of structure that proteins form. And it's not super relevant, other than to say that this protomolecule, which is either not organic as we think of it, is not, quote, alive as we think of it, or if it is, it's a very different form of life that uses completely different chemistry than what life here on Earth does. But it's mimicking these protein structures as it's presumably learning how our forms of life on Earth work, and learning to replicate that and use that to do whatever it's trying to do. And I just thought that was super cool. And we talked a little bit about this, as opposed to, like, for instance, Star Trek The Next Generation, mm-hmm. which had a lot of what they call technobabble, and was pretty well known, kind of infamous for its technobabble,
yep.
where they would just throw around these technical sounding terms. And a lot of times, if you talk to, like, an astrophysicist and ask, you know, what does fluxing the tachyon emitter mean, or whatever it was, they would tell you it's total nonsense. Like, it does, what they're talking about doesn't make any sense. It's not based on any kind of scientific principle. And now sometimes it was, I don't want hate emails from people saying, oh, blah, blah, blah was based on, you know, some of it was. But there's a lot of what they call technobabble in that show, where they were just throwing around technical sounding words or scientific sounding words. And if you actually knew what those words meant, it didn't mean anything.
Right.
And I mean, that's one approach you can take to try to convey, you know, this level of technology that's beyond us or whatever. And that works. And, you know, we're also in that show, we're talking way more in the future than what The Expanse is.
Yeah.
So, you know, The Expanse can't really, for one thing, really get away with that, because it's not that far in the future. You know, there shouldn't be much that they're talking about that we're like, what the hell are they talking about? Like, you know what I mean?
Yes.
But I like how they will, instead of just throwing a bunch of technobabble at us that's just gibberish, will actually pull in real concepts. And another cool thing is, you know, the authors of The Expanse, you know, James S. A. Corey, they have some actual exposure to biology. And a lot of times in science fiction, you see a lot of astronomy, you see a lot of physics, you know, sometimes you see some chemistry, but usually you don't see much biology, you know, and really when you start thinking about it, you know, the biology aspect is really interesting. You know, like when you're talking about encountering alien life who has, you know, completely different kinds of bacteria that we've never been exposed to and viruses we've never been exposed to and maybe biology that isn't based on carbon, you know, maybe it's based on silicone or something else, you know, and it's cool. And something I really like that this show pulls in the biology at least a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, the things that are happening with the protomolecule, you know, we talked about in season one of the podcast about how a lot of that's based on real world diseases and real world things that happen, like the people, you know, their organs like melting inside of them and them like vomiting the black goo. Like that's actually real things that have really happened. That's not make believe. And it just, like you said, it makes it so much cooler in a way, right. I think kind of more accessible.
Yes. More immersive.
Yeah.
And scarier when you bring, when you bring in the biology, things get scary, which is very effective for this show. But yeah, since we're on it, I'll mention that the scene with Amos and that scientist is my favorite from this episode because he just really knows how to get into the head of the scientist and communicate with him on his level.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really cool stuff. I mean, there's just so much awesome stuff going on with the acting in the show and, you know, I'm sure the directing and the writing and just really, really phenomenal.
Definitely. And it makes you wonder about Amos's past. Like, did he have to, you know, negotiate some kind of deal with a pedophile in the past? I dare.
Well, he's obviously talked to them before because he knows how to talk to one.
Yeah. So. Interesting.
So next we go to another scene I really liked in this episode is Alex, who I've talked about, you know, earlier on this show about how I'm really digging what they're doing with Alex and how he's kind of humanizing the story for us. And Alex is on the flight deck of the Rossi and he is going through simulations of their engagement at this communication station. And he's taking the simulation he was using to practice for it, and then he's bringing in what actually happened. And he's basically trying to figure out, you know, what he did wrong or what he could have done better because the Rossi took quite a bit of damage, you know, and they lost one of the boarding pods, which however many people were on that, you know, were killed. And Alex blames himself for losing those people. And he is taking responsibility and saying, hey, you know, if I would have flown better, if I would have done things better, you know, maybe we wouldn't have lost that pod, you know, maybe the Rossi wouldn't have taken so much damage. And he's doing the simulations just over and over and over and kind of obsessing over this. And it's at the same time, it's sometimes humorous because you'll have other scenes with people elsewhere on the ship. And occasionally you hear Alex like swearing in the background as he's doing this. But it's also, you know, it was kind of, I don't know, it really had an emotional impact for me that like he's taking it so seriously and, you know, he's really, I think, going beyond even probably what he should as far as claiming responsibility for what happened and being like, you know, next time I'm not going to make these mistakes again. And it's really cool.
Yeah. And I say kudos to the writers there because it's easy for a TV show to forget about those victims of the breaching pod that didn't make it. And here the show is saying, no, that those, what I think it was 25 people didn't make it and got killed. And what would Alex do? What would the character do? How would he react?
Right. And another thing to remember is he was in the Martian Navy as a pilot, but he wasn't a combat pilot. He was a transport pilot. And so, you know, he hasn't flown combat missions before. So these, you know, these engagements that we see on the show is the extent of his experience as a combat pilot. So, you know, it totally makes sense from a character perspective that he would be obsessing over this and that he would feel kind of, what's the word? He'd feel like he's not ready, like he's not really qualified to do this. And mm-hmm. he has to kind of step up and he has to grow into this role and he needs to be able to do as well as he can so that people aren't getting killed that can be avoided. And, you know, I think in the last episode, I said that I thought it was really cool just that they're showing these simulations because, you know, that's something in the real world. You know, I used to be a pilot, you know, and I spent many, many hours in the simulator, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, that's how it is. You know, astronauts go through simulators, you know, pilots go through simulators and, you know, it's just cheaper and safer to do something in a simulator than to do it for real. And, you know, that's something that in a lot of sci-fi, we don't really see people hitting the simulators that much or at all. and I really like, I mean, this is at least the second time they've come back to Alex doing these simulations. And I think it's really cool. And like you were saying, it's adding to the realism and it's adding to the impact of what's happening because it seems more realistic and more credible.
Exactly. Yeah. And with that perspective, I think Alex is being too hard on himself. This is his first experience in combat.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he is. But at the same time, I'm sure that everybody on the ship is glad that he's taking it so seriously and, you know, kind of burning the candle at both ends to get his head around this thing. So next, this episode, you know, I said on Twitter, I feel like more happened in this episode than in the first two episodes of this season put together. It's just like, just one just action-packed or drama-packed scene after another. And next we go to Miller, who's been basically kicked off the Rosy. And he's sitting at a bar, you know, drinking. And Amos shows up with a bag with, you know, the few personal effects that he'd left in his cabin on the Rosy. And, you know, you notice the only thing Miller cares about, he's looking in that bag for Julie's necklace or bracelet or whatever it is that he's been carrying around.
Yeah.
And then we have a great scene where him and Amos, you know, have a drink together. And it's pretty hilarious because Amos is literally there just long enough to drink the two shots that Miller gives him. And then he's out of there. But you know, they have a little conversation. And I thought it was cool because Amos was like, you know, they were talking about what happened. And Miller said something like, oh, you know, I'm sure you would have asked permission before you shot the guy, you know, basically saying like, this is kind of unfair because, you know, you're just as trigger happy as I am, you know, and Amos was basically like, you know, I think that what you did was fine, but the captain doesn't, and he's probably got a better beat on what's right and wrong than I do. So
yeah, Amos is someone that follows other people's moral compasses instead of his own, or mainly because he thinks he doesn't have a moral compass.
Yeah, and so then, you know, Amos leaves, and then Diogo shows up, one of our favorite characters, and he's kind of buddying up with Miller now and kind of taking Miller under his wing, which is hilarious because he's probably like a quarter Miller's age or a third his age. And he gives Miller a place to stay. And, you know, we have the scene with Miller giving himself a haircut and talking to Diogo about, you know, what's going on and the coming war and everything. And we find out that, you know, Diogo's like jamming to this music that it turns out is based on these transmissions that are coming from Eros. And that's pretty freaky.
Yeah. The music was at the same time creepy, and yet you could dance to it, which made it a little more unsettling. And I really like that scene where Miller's shaving and talking to Diogo, and he sees Julie in the mirror.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's not even freaked out by that anymore. I think he almost reacts in a way that tells me he finds it comforting to know she's still watching him in some way.
Yeah, and I don't know if we've talked about this on the show before or not, but I know you and I have talked about it a lot during season one, that, you know, having read the books, we were really hoping that they were going to do this because in the books, this, you know, Miller seeing Julie and talking to her is the thing in the books, you know, and, you know, we really liked the actress playing Julie, and we were really hoping that they were going to do that. And she was going to have more of a role in the show than just the few scenes that she would have had otherwise. And yeah, I'm really happy to see them doing that. And really, I think even expanding that above and beyond what was done in the books, mm-hmm. which is really cool. And, you know, as we get further into the season, we're going to see that develop further. I guess that's all I'll say about that.
Yeah, I was going to go on too, but best not. So Avas Arala has a new spy now, and she asks him to get her a secure channel so that she can talk directly to Fred. And I guess he asks her if she's ready to commit treason, which was really interesting to me that now they're going to be buddies.
Yeah. Yeah. He's kind of her man now, huh?
Co-conspirators, at least.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, eventually she actually does send a message to Fred and basically tells him, you know, that she needs his help and that if he's got any cards left to play, you know, now is the time kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. And Fred's right-hand person is a drummer, I think her name is.
Yeah.
And she is one of my favorite characters.
Yeah. Oh my God. I love her.
Yeah.
And it's cool because she wasn't really a character in the books. You know, it says on their website that she was an unnamed character in the books. And I don't even remember her at all from the books. So she didn't have much of a role at all in the books. And this is someone that they've developed for the show. Awesome role. Yet another awesome XO on this show and just phenomenal actor. And yeah, I'm loving this character.
Yeah. She just makes the character so unique. Even the way that she speaks and the way she carries herself and her attitude, she's just wonderful. And so she ends up warning Fred that he may make an enemy of Black Sky if he goes down this path. So it's just something to think about for the future.
Yeah. And it's really cool. I really like how Holden and Naomi work together and how Drummer and Fred work together. And in both cases, we see, you know, the commanding officer and then the second in command and how, you know, like in the case of Drummer, how she's really, you know, kind of like making sure that Fred is seeing things from every angle. And she's one that'll be there to say, hey, did you think about this? You know, have you thought about this? And really helping him to make good decisions, you know, and I think it's awesome.
Yeah. And that's why you have that second person.
Right. Ideally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the idea. So then we have Miller goes to see the Mormons about the Nauvoo. And that was kind of a funny scene. And if you're like me, you might have been kind of wondering, like, what's Miller's angle on this? Why is he, you know, like, I just doubt that Miller is going to start, you know, thumping Bibles or Books of Mormon or whatever, you know. But yet there he is, like having his heart to heart with the Mormon guy. yeah, since we're a few weeks behind, of course, we know what's coming in the next couple episodes. But I know the first time seeing this episode, I was kind of like, well, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah. Yeah. We saw more of the Mormons in this episode, kind of more of the religious environment. And it was kind of cool, though, because he went in there and was talking to, was he a preacher, perhaps? I'm not sure. But he was talking to one of the leaders, and this leader showed him what the ship would look like when it was up there, and they had it all terraformed. Is that the correct word?
Well, no.
Not but, terraformed, but
when it was finished.
Yeah, basically. When it was finished. But, and it was just really beautiful. Cool. Yeah, that they had farmland, and it kind of reminded me of Interstellar in a way.
So then we go, you know, to the last scene of this episode where Miller goes to see Fred Johnson. And, you know, remember earlier in the episode, you know, Fred was not super happy with Miller. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they have a conversation and kind of agree that, you know, for everybody's benefit, Eros needs to be destroyed before anyone else goes there and gets infected and spreads it, or people go and, you know, get this dangerous information. And, you know, the question is, you know, how do they destroy this asteroid, you know?
Right.
And Miller's got an idea, something to do with the Nauvoo.
Yep.
And we'll find out all about that in the next couple episodes. So, Nikki, that's, you know, that's the third episode, Static. We hit the highlights. We didn't discuss every single scene. And we've kind of talked about, you know, you don't want these episodes to be super long. And we don't think it's necessary to go in gritty detail on every single scene. There's always going to be a little filler. So we're hitting the highlights of things that we think are the most important or the most interesting or just that we enjoyed the most. So Nikki, I think you already told us, but what was your favorite scene in this episode?
Yeah, I mean, there were two, so it was a little close, but I think my favorite was the scene with Amos and Cortazar, the scientist, just because of the character development there and the information that we learned about the protomolecule.
I think I'd agree with that. I think it was actually a couple or a few scenes that kind of made up that whole bit. But yeah, the whole thing with Amos and the scientist and him being the one that got through to him and knew how to talk to him and got the information that they needed, I thought was super cool. And I think it's kind of a glimpse into Amos and is yet another clue that there's more to him than meets the eye.
Yeah. And I think there's more to him than he realizes as well. It's obvious that he knows how to talk to people and that he understands more about how humans work than he even knows.
Well, at least the psychopaths. So that's Static, and we're gonna try to get caught up here. We've got two more episodes to discuss that have already come out, and then, you know, later this week we've got yet another one coming out. And I have to say, I'm really excited to get to the fifth episode because that was really cool. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but we won't talk about that now. We'll talk about that in two more episodes.
Stay tuned.
So we will be back soon with episode 22. And until then, conserve your oxygen and your water. Resources are scarce out in the outer solar system.
Invincible me.
Flip and burn, baby.
Donkey balls.
Doors and corners, kids. Doors and corners.